Blog Talk Radio.
Blue Shirt Banner Radio. Today is Tuesday, February 23rd, and it is a special day for us because it is my partner and good friend Eddie. It is his birthday, and we are celebrating. It is our Blue Shirt Banner Radio birthday extravaganza. My friend, welcome to the show. Happy birthday.
You know, I'm a little bit touched, ladies and gentlemen. That's mostly in the head. But I have to say, thank you so much. I want to thank you for that great introduction. I want to thank everybody. I want to thank, first of all, your wife. That great picture she did for me on BlueShirtBanner.com was fantastic. The birthday wishes that have come in really have warmed the cockles of my heart. It's so fun. It's so great to see the Ranger fans wishing me birthday on the Facebook and people I've gotten to know. And I see Jackie Lomba wrote a nice little thing for me. Thank you, Jackie. And it's just good to see the Ranger fans are all together. And, Jim, I got to say this past year, 44 to 45, I'm a lot better for meeting you, my friend, and working with you. And, you know, I'm not just soft-soaping you. I'm telling you the truth. And speaking of a man, Mandar has just come in, and Mandar has seen me celebrate a lot of birthdays through the years, and I just thank everybody, and we got a lot to talk about tonight. We got the Olympics, we'll get started with that, and we got a great guest, Joey Bucchino. Joey Bucchino, I got to tell you, this guy had some run with the Rangers from 79 to 89. And I don't want to spoil the birthday extravaganza because I know you got a lot to say, and but Joey's a great guest because he actually served as interim GM for the Rangers for 54 days, and I'm sure he's got a lot of stories to tell. But I guess we'll start off with I guess what everybody's talking about is the hockey, Jim.
Well, yeah, definitely. We had the big USA game the other day, and we just want to get back to your birthday for just a second here. We've got some surprises planned throughout the night. The emails have been pouring in. I've got one here from a good friend of yours. Let me read this for you guys. Dear Eddie, happy birthday! Can I borrow $20? Signed, Brian Trottier.
Wow. Brian, perhaps.
And Now we got another special tribute. Good friend of the show wanted to make sure he checked in early. I told him we had a guest, and plus he wanted to check in early because he does have to go to bed early. So what we want to do is we want to he called and asked, can you're singing the we got to stop him already. He's singing. I had to put him on hold there for a second, but our good friend of the show, Stan Fissler, he called and said, can I please come on the air and wish Eddie a happy birthday.
Hello. I just wanted to wish my good friend Eddie Jockerman a happy birthday. Although, Eddie, I could have sworn your birthday was in June.
Oh, well, actually, Stan, Eddie Jockerman's birthday is in June, but we were kind of hoping you'd wish Eddie Geik a happy birthday.
Who the hell is Eddie Geik?
Well, Stan, he's the host of Blue Shirt Banner Radio.
Blue Shirt Banner Radio, that crappy show again. I thought he told you guys never to bother me again. Did Brian Trottier give you my number?
No,
wow,
Stan.
Fischler is not helping.
Brian's phone's turned off, Stan. Can you wish Eddie a happy birthday, please?
No. The hell with Eddie. The hell with your crappy radio show. I thought I was on a good radio station like that WFAN. Oh, I love that Francesa. Listen, you two punches don't ever call me again. Shove your birthday wishes up your keister. I ain't no Willard Scott. Birthday wishes. What a couple of a-holes. Happy birthday this.
Wow. The great Stan Fischler.
Jim Backus. I worked so damn hard on getting that together.
That was good. And then
Stan had to go and sing his Matt Gilroy song while I had him on hold. He's always full of surprises. But anyway, all right. We'll talk a little bit about hockey. More surprises to come. USA, what a great game the other night, Eddie. What a great game.
Oh, yeah. Let me say, I got to tell you, when Kessler scored that goal and they all were on the ground, on the ice there, and jumping up and pile on top of him and the smiles, and I tell you, as much as I was against the professionals playing in the Olympics, because the Olympic team is so young, I kind of felt that, I guess, that youthful exuberance that I felt like I wasn't going to feel with the pros, but it was some game. And listen, those Canadians, their fans, they're making up excuses that, oh, Brodeur blew that game for them. Listen, they want to lay the blame on one guy. Yeah, sure, Brodeur wasn't at the top of his game, but the USA deserves a lot of credit in that game. I mean, they played hard when it counted. When they had to kill penalties, they killed them. Drury was good. Ryan Callahan was pretty good on that as far as the Rangers go. I thought Eric Johnson was great on defense and just some hard work. I don't know where Brian Rafalski got this goal-scoring touch, but he gets two goals. And, everybody expected Canada has a stacked team. And everybody goes, well, they had 45 shots. They should have won the game. Everybody knew they were going to get 45 shots. Ryan Miller was definitely the difference maker. But I thought Canada lost a little bit of their drive in the second half of the game until things got real desperate, and then it was too late. Everybody, I know Ranger fans want to really just harp on Brodeur. And, yes, he didn't play a Marty type of game, but – you got to give the USA credit. They play with a lot of heart and a lot of determination. And I like them better as a team as opposed to, which I felt were a bunch of all-stars on the Canadian team, although their lineup is frightening. I mean, when you think about talent-wise.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you're right. I mean, I totally agree with you about the exuberance that they showed, and it kind of, swayed my opinion a little bit about how I felt about this team and the NHL and the Olympics. I still don't think the NHL should be involved in the Olympics if it means shutting down the game for a couple of weeks. But as far as the joy and the determination that team put into it the other night, that was great to see. And hey, we're behind them all the way. I'm looking forward to the rest of the Olympics. And then we get back to Ranger hockey, the trade deadline a week from tomorrow. Should be exciting. Next week we'll be doing a trade deadline show Wednesday night, and who knows what we'll be talking about.
Oh, yeah, that's always the most exciting part of the year for a lot of people. And for me, I like it, but I don't like it. I like it the fact that, you know, it's really exciting for the day, and I like the fact that all these people who have made trade rumors up finally can have to shut up, and they have nothing to say. And then we can just get down to talking to players and hockey and the whole bit. And that's what I like about it. And what I don't like about it is usually we make some buffoon move, and hopefully the Rangers will be sellers instead of buyers. And just basically, I was talking to a guy today at the where was I? I was at the hobby shop, and he's a big-time Ranger fan. He said, you know, I just like to see him stand pat and bring up guys from the minors. I said, that's the same thing I want. I mean, you know, I hope they don't go after some guy trying to make the playoffs and getting eliminated in the first round. I think we all agree on that as far as Rangers fans. I mean, that's no, you know, that's no stunning revelation. But we don't know. We don't know what Glenn Sayers is going to do.
No. And, well, before we get Joey on the phone with us, we got another surprise for you. Calling in for your birthday, and 732, you're on the air. Who's this?
Hey, Eddie, it's Dave Maloney, and I just wanted to wish you from the bottom of my heart a very happy birthday.
Oh, now, come on, Dave. This is not Dave Maloney.
In your honor, I'm going to down a whole bottle of scotch in your honor. I was hoping we could all...
Highly inappropriate.
We could all... sing How Old Are You Now, and for each year we get to, I take a shot, and if I'm still breathing when it's all over, I'll call Matt Sundin and have him come play for the Rangers.
What the hell is this?
Dave Maloney calling in for your birthday. I think
it's just evil Dave Maloney. We have
it's evil Dave. Yes, it's evil Dave Maloney taking time out of his Olympic hiatus. You know, he's on a. I think evil Dave is on a bender for 2 weeks, but he took time to wake up and get some coffee in him and then say happy birthday.
It's a great hiatus. I haven't seen the sunlight in 8 days.
Oh, God. I love people, Dave Maloney. He's funny.
What kind of scotch you drinking, Dave?
Chivas 18.
It's the good. He broke out the good stuff for your birthday.
Absolutely.
Dave, I appreciate it. In all honesty, I appreciate it. Only me and Dave get that, I think. And thank you, Evil Dave, for wishing me a happy birthday. And I don't know. Who's your designated driver?
Let's see. I think it's going to be Bill Tito, because I'm hoping that he'll be drinking some, too, so he'll wrap himself around a pole so I don't have to look at that mug anymore.
Oh, jeez. Man.
Evil
wow.
Dave.
You're going to a dark place, Evil Dave.
It's the scotch. He's
dark. All the lights hurt my eyes. Let it be dark.
All right, Evil Dave Maloney.
All right, Dave, thank you.
I got a feeling Joey Bucchino's listening to this and going, what the hell did I get myself into?
Did you tell him it was the birthday extravaganza and anything could happen?
No. I had no idea this was happening. All of this was sprung upon me, and I enjoy it, and I love it. And I'm all psyched up now that Evil Dave Maloney has come on and Stan Fishface has come on Mary Lou's in the chat room, and Jackie and Manda, and Craig alias DB Maven, and James, and James at 17, one of my favorite shows growing up. Adam from Chicago, Zach is here. Oh, I'm overwhelmed.
It's an extravaganza. Mandar crawled out from under the rock he's been under for the last couple of weeks. We haven't seen him.
I know Mandar's playing it low. I don't know what's going on. You talk to the fans while I try to get Joseph on the phone.
All right. So we'll see you in a minute. Just send me a private message when you guys are back.
You got it, Toyota.
All right. All right. So we'll see you in a minute. All right. So Eddie's going to bring on. Eddie's going to bring on Joe Pacino. In case you need a little background, like Eddie was saying, Joe was with the Rangers from 79 to 89 and actually wound up being the, I guess you could call him the de facto GM when after Esposito was fired and before Neil Smith was hired, Pacino was left to kind of run the store, and he actually wound up making the Rangers draft picks in the 1989 NHL draft. So we'll get into that with them. And we just want to remind you guys, like I said, next Wednesday night we'll be on the air with a special with the trade deadline edition. I believe the Rangers have a game next Tuesday night. I'll check the schedule again while we're on the air. But I think they have they play Ottawa next Tuesday night. So there'll be no Tuesday night show unless Eddie wants to do something for pregame. We'll talk to him about it. But for Tuesday night, we'll have no show. We'll be on next Wednesday night at 8 o'clock until 10 to talk about what happened or what didn't happen on the trade deadline. And then next Sunday, March 7th, don't forget, is the big rally outside MSG before the Rangers game against Buffalo. And we will be on the air at 5 o'clock. For 2 hours leading up until the game between the Rangers and the Sabres. Eddie will be at the rally live. We'll have a lot of people getting on air that night. Mike Zippo, who's been on the show a couple of times, and will join us again next week just to kind of preview the rally for us. He'll be on with us. The Blue Shirt Banner will be the only place to hear live the Fire Seder rally that will take place. We'll cover it as best we can. And hopefully get a lot of insight from the fans that are down there and see what's going on. So without further ado, I think we have Eddie back. Eddie,
yeah.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right, why don't you introduce our guest? Let's get to it.
All right. Well, I got to tell you, my next guest, I got to say, I mean, this guy started out really kind of behind the scenes and he really just rose. I mean, the guy was the interim GM for 54 days. The guy went from kind of, you know, lack of a better word, a rags to riches story. Joe Pacino is with us, and we'd like to welcome Joe Pacino to Blue Shirt Panther Radio. How you doing, Joe?
Hey, Eddie. How are you? How's everybody? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, no.
Hi, Joe. It's Jim. Thanks for coming on with us. We appreciate it.
Hi, Jim. How you doing, buddy?
So
good,
I mean,
good.
Joe,
good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's an it. I mean, this really is an interesting story. I mean, your whole life as in hockey, I started doing some research, and you really have been involved with hockey predominantly your whole life. Can you tell us how you got involved with the Rangers initially, way back when in the late 70s?
Well, what happened was, you know, my personal goal was to play professional hockey, and I didn't go to junior for a while. I never made it to the junior A, and I played at junior B, and then when I didn't go anywhere, funny story is that, you know, when parents say to you, you got to go to work, and I still wanted to be part of hockey, and I took a summer job at Bobby Orr's Hockey School in Orillia, Ontario, and Bobby and Mike Walton used to own this hockey school that went for 10 weeks, but it was a sleeping overnight camp.
Right.
So I went there for 10 weeks. And while I was there, at the time, you remember Alan Eagleson? He was the
right.
agent.
Yeah, he's
well,
the one who bamboozled Orr out of all that money.
Well, yeah, bamboozled, right. So while he was there, and Bobby owned this camp with Mike Walton, all of Eagleson's clients would be there. Darryl Sittler, who are Marcel Dion, all the big guys. Mm-hmm. So as I was there, I was hired to run the hockey program. I used to work with them. So as you're there, you know, you network. As it went on, you know, now I'm coming home 10 weeks, and Mom and Dad are ready to kick my butt because I didn't have a job yet. I needed to get a job. So long story short, the trainer for the Bruins got sick. And years ago, training camp used to go for 6 weeks. So what I did was they needed a trainer for the Bruins. And at the time, a trainer was carry bags, wash equipment, wash underwear, hang jocks. So Bobby put the word in for me, and I got a real break to go to the Bruins. So I started there at the Bruins as a trainer for 2 years. And then from there, when Esposito went to New York, I went along with Esposito in New York, and then I started my career as a trainer. And then when I went there as a trainer, I worked under Freddie Shiro. If you remember him, God rest his soul.
Let me just stop you there for a second. Now,
go ahead.
Joe, it's well documented that Phil did not like the trade to New York. He hated everything about New York. Peach Tim Cathy said he complained how cold the floors were in his apartment. He just didn't like it. Can you speak to that? Was Phil, but then he grew to love New York. Is that correct?
Yeah, that it was really the time he got traded. We were on the road, and remember Wayne Cashman?
Right, sure.
Cashman and Hodge, they went berserk. They got so aggravated, we were throwing furniture out of the window of the hotel. It was landing in the pool, landing outside. We were flipping out. But when he didn't want to go there. Phil, any place he wanted to go was anywhere but New York. But when he got there, after about 2 weeks to a month, the way that he was treated by the fans and the way the organization treated him, he fell in love with it. But at the beginning, he was very close to packing in, saying, "Listen, I'm not going."
Right.
But it worked out well, and he ended up going there, being happy, because it was a whole different thing. You know, he was, you know, the Boston boy. He was embraced by Boston, and then going from Boston to New York was a big shock for him. But once he was there, he loved it.
Now, was it the same for you, or you were just looking at, well, you know, I'm going with Espo, it's just another job, or were you a little bit upset that you, you kind of followed him, right?
Yeah, I kind of followed him. Phil was very helpful to get me over there, but I'll tell you the funny thing is that when we used to come to New York, and I used to travel with the team, when I was at Boston, I'd say, oh, my God, I could never survive here. How can people live here? It's always hurry and wait. Heart attack city. People bumping, people doing this, people doing that. And all of a sudden, you know, I was in a different situation. I wanted to stay in the game. And, you know, going from the Boston Bruins, one of the top six, the original six, to the New York Rangers was exciting for me. And so when I went over there, it started a great career for myself. I had a good break.
You know, when I put the word out you were going to be on the show, and we'll get to where you start, everybody remembers Joe Pacino for a couple things. Well, one thing is the draft, the 89 draft. And the other were those baseball satin jackets you used to wear with the Rangers emblems and the sweatpants and the sweat. You still have those things around? People want to know.
Well, let me tell you a funny story about the sweatpants and the jackets and all that. That's funny. 30 years later, we relocated. I have tons of that stuff hanging, and I saved everything.
Awesome.
So all of a sudden, you know, having three boys and a daughter now, I said, you know what, I'm carrying this all around. So I threw it all around the bed and around the garage, and one of my sons is home from college, and I said, go help yourself. I still have them, and they love it. They can't believe. They don't make those anymore.
Right, yeah.
Right, remember those? They don't make them anymore, but I still have them, and but that was my wardrobe. I never bought any clothes. We used to drink and eat and sleep out of those clothes. I still have them, though. And the funny thing is they're in better shape than when you go buy an Armani suit. But wait a minute. Well, I hope Armani's not out there. I won't get any commercial. But it's great. It was great. It was a great experience, a lot of fun, and a lot of great guys. And I learned a lot. It was better. I always say to my kids, it was better than 4 years of Harvard University working for the Rangers.
Now, we spoke a little bit with Fred Shiro, and now you're talking Fred Shiro comes in, Sonny Werblin's running the show. This is like he encouraged the players to go out and be about town, and we've heard plenty of stories about Fred Shiro. What kind of guy, you know, they call him Freddy the Frog. I guess some people call him Freddy the Frog, too, but Freddy the Frog. What kind of guy was Fred Shiro as a coach and as a person? Could you speak to him and your relationship with him?
Well, my relationship with Freddie was almost, we were like family. He embraced me and I embraced him. He took me in. He had young children there where I was. Matter of fact, I went with him and his wife to took the kids to college and back to prep school. And matter of fact, his son, who I still stay in touch with, is Ray Shiro,
right?
Who's the general manager of Pittsburgh. I was just on the phone with him about a week ago because I was looking for tickets when they come in and play Rangers on March 4th.
All right.
We were talking, but Freddie Shiro was probably one of the kindest men and most intelligent people I ever knew, not only of the game, but on life. He had a way, if you came in the locker room and watched how he coached and watched his game plan and watch how he tried to break down a film, you say, what the hell is this? Where's this guy from? But when you really, really read between the lines, he was always on the money. He had a way to motivate, and he motivated each player differently than motivating the team as one. And it was really funny, like, you know, he got that reputation of Freddie the Fog, because it seemed like he was always in the fog, but right. He was a very—he was a deep thinker, where he would be like in La La Land with his head, and you say, "Hey, where is he?" But he'd be always thinking of the game, and every game plan he presented, when the team followed it, we would either win, or you know, come out not looking that bad, and when we didn't follow, we got blew out. But a funny story with Freddie is that. Sometimes you used to get confused on how to go. Years ago, some of the rinks were really hard where they used to put us in a locker room and from the locker room to get to the ice. So one time we're in Minnesota, and I was a trainer, and the game is about to start, and no one could find Freddie. All of a sudden, the players are yelling, Joe, where's Freddie? The game's starting. I'm walking around. I'm looking. I said, oh, my God, what happened to him? I'm looking in the locker room. I'm looking underneath the benches in the locker room. I'm looking in the shower. I ran upstairs. I went down the exit. All of a sudden, I hear a banging on the door, and it was a door all the way down the hallway. He went out this door, and it was where they kept the janitor stuff, the brooms and all that, and he locked himself out. So the game, I was so nervous. I said, Freddie, what are you doing? Let's go. So I opened the door. And as I opened the door, I wanted to make sure it was all right. The door shuts. Greek et grok, as they say in Italian. We're both in this room locked by ourselves. So now we're banging on the door. I said, Freddie, I swear to God, if the press sees it, we're dead. We're dead. I got so nervous. After the first period, we were winning 3-0. And I forgot who the captain of the team was at the time. And so he decided not to go on the bench. And we end up winning that game 6-2 that night. And he wouldn't let me go on. So we stayed in the locker room. And him and I ended up playing cribbage while the game was going on. And they won 6-2 with no coach. But the story never got out. We just said we can feel good and all that. That's a true scoop. That's a true story, yeah.
Wow. That's
great. But he was a great guy. Great guy, you know, knew the game, was very sad when he passed away. And his wife was great. He has a great family, and it was nice. We had a very close relationship. As a matter of fact, I have his book, and I keep that with me because he was into a lot of the sayings and the quotes, and he was great. He was great.
Joe, I wanted to ask you, you know, he got fired in that next season, and, you know, I've talked to a lot of ex-players, and to me, I think he got a raw deal. From what I've heard, and maybe you can corroborate this or not, but some of the veterans weren't happy with him. Was that the case, or do you have the insight on why he was fired after? I mean, they got off to a bad start, but they went to the Stanley Cup the previous year, and maybe you can talk about that Stanley Cup year because that was great. But let's talk about the Shiro thing first.
Well, no, you, it's our game of hockey is very different than a lot of other sports. If you remember, Red Berenson, he got coach of the year, and the following year he got fired.
Right.
And then things like that happen. As far as Freddie goes, the players really liked him. He let them. He had a 24-hour, you know, my door's open, call me anytime. He would love to sit with a guy, talk hockey, talk about different plays, talk about teams. I just think at the time it was a whole thing at Madison Square Garden in Gulfham Weston at the time. They were in the process of making major changes, and, you know, you have to win in New York. And we weren't winning, and, you know, right away the panic button is pushed. Get rid of him, and I think that's what it was. But at the time, he had some players that didn't, you know, want anything to do with him. But that wasn't the reason. Those plays did not influence to get him out. It was just a matter of making these changes, you know.
Right. Now, tell us about that 78-79 Stanley Cup run. And, man, I have to tell you, the city was so charged. I remember I can still see it to this day. Open up the New York Post and seeing Carol Vatney with a big cigar and a back page, and everybody was so excited. And I'm lucky that I have most of those games on video, and, you know, I watch them. And Joe, for you, that had to be an exciting time.
I still talk about it now because currently now, like, I'm coaching the club hockey team at St. Thomas Aquinas College in Rockland County. And, you know, when I'm trying to relate to these kids, I bring up the 79 experience because it's something that will always stick with me. The city was vibrant. The organization was excited. The players are on a cloud. I mean, I remember the time we had, I believe it was Ricky Chatra, we were playing the Flyers, and he got a two-hander right on his thumb. And the thumb was hanging, and the doctor came in and said he was out, and he almost punched the doctor out for telling him that he couldn't play because he was in a zone that he wanted to play. So he says, "Joe, come here." I said, "What?" He goes, "Put my thumb back in place." I said, "How am I going to put your thumb back in place? It's hanging down in your pinky." I said, "You can't even hold a stick." So he actually took his thumb that was broken hanging, pulled it back up, and I taped it, and the guy played the whole series against the Flyers at the time. Wow. Guys believed in themselves. John Davidson, remember this?
Was
playing? He was playing in his own. But, you know, we were believing because, you know, Sonny Werblin, God rest his soul, another one that passed away, he was treating the team first class. We would wake up in Montreal when we were in the finals, and the Post and all the New York papers would be outside our door in Montreal. He was flying those papers in because we were the front page. Guys were feeding off each other. And the thing was that the older guys thought they were young, like Esposito, Kachuk. They thought they were 20-year-old again. And the sad thing about it was they, meaning the older guys, like who Walter and Vickers and all those guys that were waiting for a cup for all these years, they won the cup that year. They were ready to make millions and millions and millions of sponsors.
Right.
And they really wanted it bad because it was like a dream come true. But we were really excited. And what blew it was that second game. We were down.
Well, Bunny,
you were up in games. Weren't we 2-1 or something?
You up 1-0. Bunny LaRocque is going to start and go for Montreal. They lost faith in Dryden after game one, which was stupid. And LaRocque gets hurt in practice, and they put in Dryden winds up starting the game. You know?
He wasn't a goalie. He was a damn wall. That's what happened.
Exactly. And you were up 2-0 in the first period of game two.
So, I know.
I mean,
but
let me tell you, I was a young – I want to say young, but I was like – I had to, 79? I was 14 years old at the time. I remember it was Mother's Day, that game one.
Right.
I was so mad I had to go out on Mother's Day because the Rangers were playing. Mother, I was watching the game.
But you know what? That was the year, too, that I was I got an award for cheerleader of the year from this association.
What?
Because I don't know if you remember, I was on the bench, and I had the second balcony to my right cheering and the second balcony to my left going back and forth, And I had it going pretty good, and I got a call from the cheerleading association, someone who gave me an award. It was funny, but it was great. It was great. Those are great. Oh my God, that was a long time ago. But I still look in the mirror, and I still look young. What the hell's going on here?
It's the same thing with me. We both have the same problem. We don't look good for our age.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you, and this is kind of a carryover from the Cup question, is you have the Islander-Ranger rivalry. I mean, this is like, people don't even understand. It's a shell, a former shell, what it once was. And beating them in the semis, and then even later on with the Ulf Nielsen thing with Potvin, was there any animosity? First, I'll go with the question is, was there any true animosity to the Ulf Nielsen hit? I've talked to Ulf Nielsen. Ulf doesn't really, he doesn't hold anything against it. He's just surprised there's no Ranger coverage on WFAN. He really doesn't care about what Dennis Potvin did to him 30 years ago. Tell me, was that rivalry palpable, and did the Rangers really have a disdain for the Islanders back then? And how about the Potvin hit on Nielsen?
On the Potvin hit on Nielsen, a lot of guys were angry and disappointed, but no one they held it inside.
Mm-hmm.
But the rivalry between the two teams was probably the best rivalry you want. And what was good for us was that the fan base in New York, the Ranger fans, would take care of Potvin and company on their own. Because they still do the chanting now.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember, you know. But it was really funny. When we played them, I was telling you, going back to Freddie, the game plan to beat the Islanders that year, and I remember him putting on the board, work the defense. And what he meant by that was he just wanted us to, every time, put the puck in the corner, hit Potvin. Guys were crashing in him like bumper cars. And by the third period, this guy wasn't there.
Ah.
But, the rivalry was strong. It was exciting to play them. Our players didn't like the Islanders, didn't like the players, but respected them.
Right.
But didn't like them, if you know what I'm saying. And I think that was more important for us to beat them that year than for us to go to the finals. You know what I'm saying? The meaning of it. Because if we didn't beat them, that would have still been hung over their heads today.
And you really think about it, for the Islander fan, you know, in a way, that losing to the Rangers was kind of a good thing, because that got their, you know, proverbial tookuses in gear for the next 4 years, because they were crushed. There's that picture of Dennis Potvin just on his knees, like he's ready to cry. They were
the prize factor. There's a lot of pride shot down the tubes. But you know what was really, when I used to go to the meetings and hear the scuttlebutt in the business circle, that series, the Islanders made more money because of our fans, Ranger fans, at the island.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Because
if you didn't get tickets here, the Ranger fans would be at the island, and we sold it out. We sold out for the Islanders. It was incredible.
It's unbelievable that even then, Ranger fans predominantly go to the Ranger around the game.
This morning when I was leaving, I was with a bunch of friends in New York, and I said, yeah, I'm going to be on the station tonight. I'm pretty excited. And they all started chanting, Potvin sucks. I couldn't believe it. The clear blue sky. Oh man, it was funny.
People still chanted at the Garden.
I know.
Jim, do you have anything? I feel like I'm hogging everything here with Joe.
That's all right. You don't hog. But you said I went rags to riches. I'm rags to rags. I'm not rags to riches, all right?
Well, I think of you. See, I have all these videos, Joe, of the old Ranger game, so I'm still stuck in like 85, 84. So you're still in Rich City as far as
I'm concerned. So.
And that's the way I want to think of you. Now, go ahead, Jim. Shoot the man a question.
Well, Joe, I actually wanted to backtrack a little bit to when you first got to the Rangers with and Emil Francis was still there, and we've had him on the show a couple of times. And What was it? He's told us the story about how he got fired or left the Rangers. What was that like? Can you give us a little, maybe a little insight
on
that?
Now, I came when, you remember John Ferguson?
Oh yeah,
sure.
But I was there that year. That was like my year. I was there, and then I came, Fergie, then Freddie Shiro.
Wow. Were you there for the Jean Guy era?
No, that's when he came in the sweatsuit. No, I came after him.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute.
You got the sweatshirt and sweatpants when he left.
Right. No, he was there. When I came in, those were his last days.
Okay.
Oh.
So, yeah, he was there, John Guy, with the sweatsuit and in the turtleneck. But you know what? I was there a lot with a lot of guys getting fired and let go. And plus, you know, with me, too, being let go, it's probably the greatest place and the greatest organization to work for. But when you are let go and you're not there anymore, you it hits you hard. No matter if you're a coach or trainer, if you work inside the garden, it's just that, you know, working for that organization and working at Madison Square Garden and representing that whole circle is probably a dream come true, and it's probably the greatest experience and feeling you ever have. But when you let go, no matter where you go, what other team, it puts you right in the heart. And I can't explain why, but I know. I mean, Phil Esposito, when he was let go and I was his assistant, I mean, you know, we talk. It still bothers us once in a while. You know, with me, it was a little different, you know. I miss it bad. I wish a lot of guys that, a lot of people that are there now that I took in as a break are doing great, having great careers, and that's great. And I could have still be there. But then you look back and you say, you know, what should I have done? But, you know, when you get in this business, it's your one foot in and the other foot in on the banana skin. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
So yep. you never know. But it was devastating. And I haven't met anyone today who has worked for the Rangers or Madison Square Garden that has been let go that is still upset, they're still upset about it. And it bothers you. It's just, and you know, they don't do it in a mean fashion. Matter of fact, they take pretty good care of you when they do it. I mean, they, you know, they make sure that you have some money to get you by. They help you look for other jobs. But it's just that you think it's the end of the world, that there's no life anymore. And a lot of guys feel that way. But let me see. When I was there, it was Phil. When Phil was let go, then I stayed.
And
then right after the draft, it was C'est la vie, Joe Bucchino.
Well,
and I'll tell you, I love that 89. You know, you can look about that 89 draft. We had a great draft that year. My scouts, let me tell you, my scouts worked so hard because I wanted the job. I went for the GM job, and I was interim at the time. 54 days, not on the mirror.
Funny how that number keeps coming up.
I know, but the scouts really dug down deep. Do you know we worked right through the night, you know, at the draft, making sure we had the right selections. And our draft, we had that year, more players stayed in the NHL and made it than any other draft in history. And you could check that in the books.
Oh, I did. And I checked it out, and I got to say, you made some good selections. Great. Guys played a lot of games. You've got a lot of serviceable guys out of that draft that played in the league for a while. Joe, I just wanted to ask you something about that draft. If I could go back in the time machine, if I could take the hot tub time machine and go back, I would go and tell Joe Bucchino and whisper in his ear, Nicholas Lidstrom. Because Nicholas Lidstrom was taken in that third round of that draft, but I guess back then people weren't doing the European thing, and you didn't know if the guys were going to come or not, but you picked up some good draft picks in that.
Yeah, that was the theory then. He was rated very high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you do is you have a book in front of you. You have all your scouts throw all the names in what you're doing all year. and you put it in it, and you come out in the meetings with your list, say 1 to 100. So if number 3 gets, all of a sudden, you're up 7th to pick. And out of those 7, you had picked someone that's number 3. 3, you cross them off your list, so number 4 on your list comes number 3. That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
He was rated very high. But the problem was, is he going to come?
Right.
You need him. You know, it's not like today. They these Europeans run because they got the mouchard or the money coming too. You know what I'm saying? So, but the guy we wanted was Stephen Rice. And at that time, he was with the Rangers, the junior Rangers, and we got him. And he did well for us. But there were a lot of good Europeans that were available, but no one wanted them. Unless you didn't need them that year and let them go, develop.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's the way it was.
Well, Pavel Bure was taken in that deal, but who knew back then if he would ever come over from Russia? They had to defect. They had to do whatever they had to do back then.
Right. They had a sneak jump. Hey, they were in a, one of the plays was in the trunk of the car. You stayed here for 2 days. He ate Nestle Crunch. I swear to God. Oh,
now,
man.
I got to tell you, that's why I love the old days. There's just so many great stories. Somebody pick up that phone. My phone's ringing back. No, I'm doing a show here.
Maybe it's Domino's Pizza.
It might be.
Hey, Joe, you drafted Stephen Rice and you drafted Louis DeBrusk. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
Well, Stephen Rice went in the Messier trade.
So did DeBrusk.
For getting us Jacques Messier.
That's right. Joe, you were responsible for that trade. If not for you, Mark Messier may never have come to the Rangers.
Well, let me tell you something about Mark Messier trade. I do have to say one thing for Esposito. When Phil Esposito was general manager there, he, at that time, walked in and said, I want to go after Messier, and they wouldn't let him. They wouldn't let him. He wanted to make a trade for Messier, or Messier was going to come as a free agent, or we were going to give a high draft pick, and he got his hand slapped. After he was gone, they did it, and look what happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what I loved about Phil, and you spent many times with him, and I'm sure you're going to corroborate this. He says what's on his mind. He's a straight shooter. No matter what if it causes him harm or not, he's going to say what he wants. And I applaud that. And what I loved about him as a Ranger fan, although the Rangers weren't all that successful while he was there, I loved it because he was making trades like every week. I mean, I was like, we got this guy. Oh, we got Pat Price this week? Yeah. Jeff Brubaker? Yeah. Bring him in. I want to see this guy.
Right.
And he seemed like he was the kind of guy like he cared so much that he was just going to, if he saw something broke, he had to try to fix it. Was that the type? Can you give us an insight about what was going on with you and him and that time during the Rangers period?
At that time, when we were really cooking, but one year we were really struggling. So he would give a guy a chance, he would give a guy a second chance, but if he felt that he could make a move to better the team he was, and that one year we ran out of more pens and ink because we made like 47 changes one year. If you remember, we were like going berserk. Paper, we cut down more trees for the paper going out to make the contracts, and the league, we blown out fax machines. But the thing with Phil was that he would give you a chance, and if you didn't give back 110%, then you weren't going to stay around. But sometimes, you know, as he was going on that year, he was starting to feel the heat. You know, he was starting to feel the heat. You got to remember, when you're a superstar and you're a Hall of Famer and you're in that position, you want to do the same as the manager as you did as a player. And if it doesn't happen, you get two choices. You got to trade a guy or go get a new guy, and that's what he did. But he was very good with the players. He was very personal with the families. He, you know, birthdays, the wives and girlfriends, you had to always make them happy. There'd be flowers and balloons waiting at the house. He would have a lot of team get-togethers with the children. He was very good that way. And Phil was an usher in my wedding, don't forget.
Oh, wow.
He was an, Yeah, in Huntington. Remember we talked about
it? Yeah, the Huntington townhouse.
They make condos out of them. How do they make a place where you get married money and condos are next? He was a very, very kind guy, and he did well. But I'll tell you, I say today, you know, he was incredible in the booth, if you remember that.
Oh, well, he was a straight shooter in the booth, too.
Yeah, you know what he did once? He brought the stopwatch up there. He used to, you remember, what's his name? What the hell's his name? Rexy Russellane, remember?
Right, yeah, Rexy.
He used to say, this guy here, he never stays on the ice more than 30 seconds. What is he, chicken, Bobby, blah, So he got some letters from a fan saying, leave Ray alone, he's a cute guy, he's good and all that. So he says, yeah, he went up in the booth and he took the stopwatch. And he started taking time on Rexy to see how long he was going to be on. And it was funny, Phil was right. So he got in touch with that fan. He said, you want me in this letter? You're going to meet me in the box. He took him in the box one game and had the stopwatch, and it was true. Rexy was staying on 29, 30 seconds of getting off. But he was great in the booth. He was great.
He's still on that XM radio. He's still mixing up. And do you feel that just with the close with the Phil talk, do you think he's still kind of upset that he's not affiliated with the Rangers? Or you kind of mentioned and alluded before that, or is he basically, you know, the Bruins have kind of embraced him as well, you know, so maybe he's not so much, but what's your feeling on that?
I feel that Phil would love to be back in the game in some capacity with some team in the National Hockey League. And if he could go back, I think Boston would be one, New York would be two, in a management position. But, you know, I know in the past, probably over the past 5-6 years, he tried to get back in different positions, but it just didn't work out. But I know he would love to be back. I know it. But he would come here in a heartbeat, and he would be great here in some capacity. But, you know, it's different now. You know, it's a younger crowd.
Right.
The younger group getting in, they're not getting paid as much money as these guys were in the past, and owners are going with them, and they're being patient. If you look at some of the teams, you know, I love George McPhee. Remember George McPhee?
Right, yeah, he's a GM
of
the Capitals.
He's a friend of mine.
Yeah.
Smart guy, became a lawyer. But if you look at him as a general manager, I mean, you know, it's not his fault, but years ago, I mean, he never made the playoffs. He was, you know, struggling. They had nobody at the gate. The owner saw something, and that's a compliment to the owner. Stayed with them, and look at him. He's got a great franchise today.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a great team, a great franchise. But years ago, that wasn't like that, man. You had a win, or you're going to be Fenny. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And but today for Phil, though, you know, it's different. There's so many guys that love to get back in. Like, I stay in touch with a lot of the Bruins alumni because I'm involved with them. Gary Doak, if you remember that name.
Gary Doak, defenseman. Yeah.
Yeah. Gary Doak, Brad Park, you remember him. They're hanging in Boston. All those guys would love to be back in. Jerry Cheevers.
Cheevers, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, he was scout with the Bruins for years, and then they let him go a couple of years ago. How do you let go Jerry Cheevers? But today, they don't care.
Yeah.
Get rid of them, you know?
You know what it is? It's, and again, we talk about it on this program. A lot of times, and this goes, and this is my own opinion as far as the Rangers go, and we pride ourselves on this program, is they're so obsessed with 1994, they don't realize that there's a Ranger history before then that really's got a lot of great stories and a lot of great characters, and that's what we try to bring to the people. That's why I kind of put out the word, trying to get in touch with you, because I knew you'd give some great stories. That Fred Shiro story is hysterical. I'm going to repeat that one for years. But I guess my last story with Phil goes, he quit in the middle of the season. I think a lot of Ranger fans kind of held that against him. Can you tell us what was, you know, I don't want to make this a Phil Esposito through Joey Facchino interview, but can you just give us an insight about what was going through Espo's mind at that time?
Well, that was the time he got rid of Bergeron. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, he got rid of Bergeron. Then I think the mistake he made was there was the timing of getting rid of Bergeron and him going behind the bench and coaching. He was coaching GM. And you can't do, at that time, it started to kick in that you can't do both jobs. Right. And I think that was a big negative towards him. Now, did we realize it then? No. But looking back, that was huge. I mean, it was getting to a point, you know, Michelle Bergeron was struggling. We weren't winning. Guys weren't playing up to the potential. Watching the games, we had no drive, and he held that, you know, the coach right away gets nailed. So we decided to get in the plane, him and I, and we flew all the way to Vancouver, and we fired the guy out there. And at that time, there was only a few games left to the season. Mm-hmm. And I think he rushed that at that time. That was like he should have waited. But that was a big move he made. And he thought maybe getting in there, because when you know a coach goes on a bench and there's a change, all of a sudden the team goes in when they win 10 in a row. And he thought that might happen, but it didn't. They didn't win any. I think they won one or two more games. And I think that's when everything started just falling down.
Now, Jim, who did we have on the show, a former player, said he couldn't understand one word Michelle Bergeron was saying on the bench? Who was that?
Was it Bob Brooks?
Bob Brooks. Yeah, I think it was Bob Brooks, and he didn't know what the hell he was saying.
Bergeron had the reputation. He coached on motivation versus trying to understand him. And that was he was a motivator. His dream was to be the worm in the apple in New York City. He used to say, I want to be the worm in the apple. And but he was a great motivator at the time because he had Quebec and the Nordiques. But he was very hard to understand them. But he could explain, on the board. He was very big in the X's and O's and breaking down tapes, you know.
He was like a little Napoleon back there.
Eddie, it was John O'Grodnik that said that.
Oh, John O'Grodnik, okay.
Johnny O'Grodnik, where is he now? Oh, my God.
Hey, you should talk to Johnny O. He's a big
we had him on the show
finance
too.
Guy now.
Where is he, in New York?
No, he's in Detroit.
Johnny O. And where was Bobby Brook?
Bobby Brook, well, he's still in go ahead.
I just went and looked it up real quick. Brook didn't play for Bergeron, but it was John O'Grodnik that said that when we had him on the show.
Yeah, Johnny O. He had that big shot in the left side. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
He had 40 goals for the Rangers 1 year.
Yeah, he came over with Willie Huber and Mark Osborne.
Right. And
that big tree. Remember that?
It was a lot of things. You know, Ranger fans, again, they have a lot of malice for Willie Huber. They were expecting a lot of physical play, but Willie was a power play guy. He was an offensive guy.
Yeah, Willie. See, that's the rap. If you're 6'3", if you're over 6 foot and you're 225 pounds or bigger, and you're a defenseman, if you don't hit, you're a wimp. And he came over for the power play, and that was it. But they were really against him because they wanted him to be, you know, break bodies in front of the net, and that wasn't his style.
So now, hey, Joey, I want to ask you some critical questions here.
Yeah.
I want to ask you. I'm going to give you three ranges. You tell me how, if they were tough son of a bitches or not. Now, Barry Beck, was he a tough son of a bitch?
Heavyweight. Next.
Nick
Barry Beck was a heavyweight.
Nick,
he could.
Nick Fatio.
Heavyweight. Next.
George McPhee.
Heavyweight. Okay, now I'm going to go back. Barry Beck was a very defined fighter. I mean, he could set up. He was more positioned. Nicky Fatio was a power fighter. He wanted to grab you. He could take a punch. He was a little punch crazy. He could take a punch, but if he grabbed you, you're dead. George McPhee was a fighter that people would look at him, and they would say, oh, he's small and limp. He was probably one of the fastest. He used to, his hand used to be like a 747. Bum, 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 bum. He used to punch quick, fast, and he knew how to throw a punch. Like, he threw everything, arm and hand. But he fought Clark Gillies against the Islanders. You remember that?
Yep, and he fought Nystrom. He fought Rick Tockett twice in that series. And I don't remember the Gillies fight too much, but I do remember the fight he had with Nystrom. Nystrom headbutted him on the island, and I was so pissed. I was like, that cheap SOB had to headbutt in order to win the fight because George beat him. And, yeah, he was a tough hombre. There's no doubt about it.
Well, he was tough. He could fight, man. He could throw like you can't believe. Three heavyweights, one, all different styles, but heavyweight.
Yep. And who was a guy that, how do I phrase this? Who was the guy that a lot of players just couldn't take to, or a guy that just didn't fit in New York? Let me do it that way, that you could think about maybe.
Chris Nylund?
Chris Nylund. Yeah.
Knuckles Nylund. He was a crazy fighter. He wasn't a heavyweight, but he was crazy. He'd do anything. He'd bite, slap, scratch, kick. He would do anything to win. He was a crazy fighter. But I'll tell you, that guy was an incredible leader in the locker room. He would get up in the locker room, and he'll turn around to a player. And I never forget, he got up in the locker room. Mike McEwen, remember him?
Oh, yeah. I remember
Mike. Yeah, he had the picture. He got up in the locker room one day, and he says, hey, listen, if you don't come out on the ice and stop playing, I'm going to beat the shit out of you right on the ice. I swear to God. And McEwen would look at him and say, what, are you kidding me? So you go to the bench, and Knuckles would get up and said, I'm telling you, McHugh, get out there and play. The kid go out there out of fear and get two goals to assist. No, but he was a great guy in the locker room.
You know, because I don't know if you're aware, but this is a book out now called 100 Ranger Greats. And I know the authors pretty well. They made two co-authors, and the late John Halligan came up with this list of the 100 Ranger Greats, right? You know who's in that book? The guy we just talked about. Mike McEwen. And I had the authors on and said, you had Mike McEwen in this book? I mean, the guy, all right, he had 20 goals with the Rangers, but now I'm finding out he was scared crapless. That's why he got the 20 goals with the Rangers. He's worried about Nylund beating him up.
He was in that book?
Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
Nobody, I'll tell you. He was another guy that was brought over for the power play.
Right.
I mean, he had a cannon. Every shot he had from the point was low and on net, and it was hard. I saw him fold goalies and put them in. But you know what, though? 100 greats, I don't know. I got to question that one.
I mean,
he was great, but I don't know. Maybe 101. Who knows?
let me just ask you, I guess – who are some of the all-time characters? We know Nicky Fatia was an all-time funny guy, and I think he probably joined the Rangers after Stemkowski was there. Who were the guys that did a lot of pranks and a lot of funny guys that maybe, you know?
Well, let me tell you this one. How would you like going into the shower, putting the shower on, and all of a sudden coffee's coming out of the heads? Nick Fatia. How do you like sleeping in your room on the road in Los Angeles, and as you're lying down in the bed, you're dead sleep, someone pays the maid to get in the room, and as you lie down and you wake up, there's a lobster crawling up your chest. Nick Fatia. How do you like Ron Duguay getting the blow dryer? You remember Ron Duguay with his hair, right?
Yeah,
that was
right.
Like
yeah.
The thing. Putting ready to blow his hair, and all of a sudden, baby powder comes out of the hair dryer. Nick Fatio. And how do you like this one? I never forget this story. We won I don't know if it was the playoffs or what. We were coming back, and we used to charter our own planes. And we're coming back, and the guys are all excited and all ready to go. And Nick Fatio and Chris Nylund had a bet or a card game. And whoever lost, guess what they had to do? They had to go in the tank. Go in the tank. Remember years ago, they used to put the tank of lobsters in the airports?
Right, yeah.
Walk by. They would have to open up the tank. We broke the lock. Go in the tank and stop fighting the lobsters. And Nick Fatia won, and Nylund had to go in there. We were coming out. They went off first. We were coming out, and all of a sudden we're looking, and here's all these lobsters biting Chris Nylund. Nick Fatia picked them up, put them in the lobster tank. I think Nicky Fatia was probably the prankster. It was incredible what he did. Yeah.
I got a chance to talk to Nick about, you know, all his pranks. He says, "Oh, nobody ever got me." And then I remember the story that Ron Greshner tells. Nick was wearing, maybe you were around for this, Nick was wearing a shirt that looked like an Italian, like, restaurant tablecloth. And and Greshner came in with the silverware and the whole thing. And apparently, Nicky said he went after Greshner and pinched him on the nose so hard because he was just totally goofing on Nicky. But the stories with Nicky are just...
We were flying to Los Angeles, and everybody was falling asleep. And the players would actually say to the people beside them, like people that you don't know, "I'll give you 10, 20 bucks if you just make me sleep. And if this guy comes near me, just hit my knee." But they would never do it. One day, going to L.A., Nicky took a pair of scissors and cut everybody's tie in half. In half! While they were sleeping, and when they woke up, they all had half ties. And he used to carry a case of shaving cream wherever he went. Because when you're sleeping, you can put shaving cream in your head and in your face, and you don't even feel it. So guys would wake up with shaving cream on them, and then and all of a sudden as you're moving, it's sliding, it tickles you, you put your hand up there, and it's all over your face. Nicky used to do that. I mean, he was awesome,
you know,
that way. That's what kept guys together.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I remember as a kid, they put a picture in the Daily News of Anders Hedberg with a big thing of shaving cream on top of his head as he was asleep on the team plane. I guess it was Fatiu that must have done it to him.
That's right. I'm telling you, he was unbelievable. I used to have to take the shaving cream from him. It was ridiculous. But I would never sleep with him. He'd get you. And you remember Eddie Johnston?
Johnston?
Yeah, he used to have the cowboy hat. And Eddie slept, and he loved his cowboy hat. And these guys paid hundreds and thousands of dollars for cowboy hats. So when Eddie slept, he tried to hide it. Nicky went around looking for the hat everywhere. He took the hat, and on a plane to Vancouver, he had every passenger sign the hat.
Oh, yeah.
With a magic marker.
Yeah, I've heard that story. Isn't there another story where Hedberg and Nielsen, they said there was a fire at the hotel, and they told him he had to leave the building, and it was raining out, but it was like a false alarm, and I think Alfie and Anders wound up outside in the rain, you know, waiting for this fire alarm, for the clear, all clear call. And
we got away with that stuff. Isn't that something? Today you end up in jail.
Oh, yeah. But those were the days.
Those were the days. No,
yeah.
They were really great days.
And I guess the thing I always remember, another Joey Bucchino moment that stands out in my mind is when the Bruins go into the stands at the Garden, and you actually came out on the ice to calm down Dave Maloney, who went berserk.
Right.
And he doesn't remember why. I don't know. I think it was because, again, my memory, you know, again, over the years, but I have seen the games. I think it's John Wensink was, like, standing on J.D.'s chest, and there was no penalty, and I think Dave Maloney was going crazy more about that than what was going on. Said, can you tell the people out there, because we have a lot of people in the chat room here, we got about 25, 30 people, can you go over pretty much what happened? I mean, fans have heard of this, but in today's game, forget about it. You've never seen anything like this.
No, what happened was that, you know, we were playing the Bruins that night, and then as you look into the net to the right side, in one crowd, there was a group of guys that were really harassing O'Reilly, Wensick, who was the hell was
Bill
that Berry?
Bill Berry,
Mahavlich, the brother, Peter Mahavlich. Was it Peter? Yeah, I think we had
McNabb.
Peter McNabb, right. I'm sorry, right. So they were harassing him. And then someone from there actually threw something, either a bottle cap or something, and it hit O'Reilly right in the face. And he turned around and he saw the guy, and the guy said, "Come here, challenge, come here." Now, I knew all these guys, and I knew how O'Reilly would be. So O'Reilly, right away, he flips out. He wants to get in the stands. He jumped over the glass, okay? He jumped over the glass. Other guys jumped over the glass. He took the guy's shoe and beat the hell out of him.
Yeah.
It was incredible. Yeah, they broke that up. But meanwhile, Wenzik and Maloney were going at it during the game while the game was going on prior to this incident. And Wenzik did something that got Maloney crazy. But I didn't want Dave to get involved. So when I went out there, I wanted our team being away from that because I just felt that there was going to be suspensions and guys getting,
riot.
The police.
I mean, it almost turned into a riot. I mean,
it was going to be a riot. So when Dave was going to go after Wenzik and Wenzik wanted Dave, before this whole thing started brewing, I wanted to get the guys right off the ice. But that was my walk to fame.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I still see it with my plaid pants. I said, oh, my God, what a wimp I am. But that was the reason. No, that was the reason. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah.
You were styling back then, Joe. I tell you, you were styling. You were the envy. I mean,
my collar of my shirt matched my pants. How do you like that? Remember
that's
those?
Right.
I had a plaid collar, and it used to give me a rash. I used to hate it on my neck. I used to put more baby powder and cream on my neck for my heavy beard. You know these Italians.
It was the Studio 54 days. I mean,
Oh, man. I'll tell you, those were the days.
Yeah, I got it.
Those
were
the
you.
Days. We had good times in Studio 54. We had great times.
We could do a whole show on that.
Oh, we'll need a week. I need a week on that. Maybe we'll do the next show in Hawaii at a press conference. We'll do a whole week.
I guess another incident I wanted to talk to you, I don't want to take up too much of your time, and we were already talking almost a good 50 minutes here. I love it. Was in 1980, a good friend of mine, Chris Gostopoulos, I know,
he's an awesome guy. Awesome.
I contacted Chris before the show, and I said, listen, I'm going to have Joey Bucchino on the show. I want some dirt on Joey. I want to get him with something. And he wrote back to me, sorry. He's a class guy. He was in my corner all the way. I can't give you any info. That was it. So he said,
thank you. Thank you, Chris. No, I'll tell you the funny story with Chris. Well, not funny story. I was at in Bridgeport. I had a son that was invited to the Bridgeport camp about 2 years ago, and Chris was there. And you know us, in sports, in all sports, no matter what level you're on, you're always hugging and kissing and grabbing and all that. So we saw each other. We get a great hug. And he, at that time, he was going to be the, I don't know if he's still doing it, Bridgeport, the Island of Farm team announcer.
He announces the Quinnipiac Bobcats college team now, he does. But he's moved on from that, yeah. But go ahead.
So what happened was we were there and we were talking and, it's funny, you look back and you say, what are the things that you were great for me, you were great for me. When he came in, he had underwear that had these moth holes on. They were like Swiss cheese. Everything was hanging out when he put his underwear on to go on the ice. So at that time, we had to be careful. You don't get new underwear out until, and when we talk underwear, you're talking the long johns. For
he's
players
a big
that
boy, too. He's a big boy.
Oh, mamma mia. He was a monster. So what I did was I snuck it, but I didn't want to put it brand new. So I got a roll of black friction tape, and I started mocking the underwear up like it was used and we had worn it. And I threw in his bag, and I gave him the underwear. And I just, from that day, that's the reason why he feels that, I stuck by him, which I did because this kid had a heart. I mean, he had a heart. He was a great guy. He worked hard. He came from a small town. And he has this underwear on that I said, hey, everything's hanging out of there. You can't wear that underwear on the ice. So, it was good. But I'm glad he didn't say any stories. That's all I need now, please.
No, he spoke highly of you. So,
he's a good man.
And,
he's a good man.
He's still a monster. I'm afraid of him now. Like,
I know, huh?
He was tough. Tough hombre. No doubt.
Yeah, he was tough.
He was tough. And I just want to go, I guess the incident is, I mean, it's funny now, but the Kings game in L.A. in the playoff, the 80-81 season, where Nicky comes off the bench and he bangs some guy's head into the glass. What the? Do you remember that? And what the hell was going on? It was like wrestling. I mean, it was surreal. I mean,
remember the time? Remember Eddie Hospital went after Marcel Dion?
Yeah. And Marcel's doing the Marcus of Queensberry rules with his fists, like we're gonna fight him. They fought
at the warm up.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was at the warm up. It was so bad because it was stuff that was brewing in the papers. That was the problem. Oh, I'm going to get him. Eddie Hospital is not that tough. Now, there's a kid that was a heavyweight. There was a kid that I remember, he punched Clark Gillies in the face, and he pushed his teeth right up his bridge.
Wow.
His punch. And the dentist had to pull the teeth out with the pliers. I never forget that. But because he had a heavy, hard punch. But Marcel Dion was yapping in the papers. A lot of the L.A. Kings at the time, you know,
they were yapping. Good. Yeah, they were good that season, the Kings. I think.
Oh, my God, they were awesome. So all of a sudden, while the warm-up's going on, there's a fight between Eddie Hospital and Marcel Dion. I couldn't believe it. Then Nicky got involved. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Joe, would you like to take a call? We got a fan on the line who wants to speak to you.
Yeah, I'll take a call.
All right.
I'd love to.
All right. Bring him in, Jimmy.
All right. We have Ricky. Ricky, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good. How are you?
Long time, no talk. Still stuck in Baltimore.
You're
sorry
on the
to
line
hear that.
With the great Joe Pacino, Rick.
Joe, I got to tell you, it was so much fun back in the days. When you first came to New York, I was a young kid and, you know, used to cut class and go to pregame skates and morning skates, and you and Esposito were always top of the line. Phil used to pull over the car. He had the big Samoan driver for a while, too, afterwards. I think his name was Richie, wasn't there, something like that?
Oh, yeah, Rich, right.
Yeah, big Samoan Rich, and he used to pull over and give us a lecture about cutting school and tell us he was going to call our parents, and I said, listen, if you ever call my dad, Phil, he'll have a heart attack. He's a bigger fan than I am. And then he would tell me to shut up and get in the car, and he'd let us come in and watch morning skate and stuff like that. It was such a good time to be a fan, you know, of the NHL. And, you know, you're every you know, American boy's, you know, non-GM dream. You made it where we all want to be, and, you know, I hope you're proud of what you accomplished. It was great. And I'm a big fan because in one season that you ran the draft, you single-handedly tried to turn this organization from a bunch of wuss bags to a tough organization, and you actually drafted a very big draft that year. And, you know, I'm a very big fan of physical hockey. My nickname on the show is the Goon. And you drafted Jason Pozoski and you know, Stephen Rice and all those guys that year, and you tried to do something that, you know, a lot of the GMs at the time with the Rangers were letting the Rangers get pushed around. And your draft actually led us to get Mark Messier, and people don't give you enough credit for that because Stephen Rice was part of that trade.
I appreciate your kind words, and everything you said was so true because at that year, we had to change our tone. We had to change our type of team we had because we were weak. We weren't tough. And, you know, you could get these players. The toughness wasn't guys just could fight. The toughness was guys that were going to play physical. And that's when we got Louis DeBrusk and that whole gang. So, yeah, and it was something that as a group with the scouts, we had Donnie Murdoch was with us. We had, I forgot my scout's name. They were all over the place. But they were on the same page. But I appreciate that because that means a lot. And no one ever said that to me. And
You indirectly brought
true.
Us the Stanley Cup, Joey, so you should be proud, man.
Oh, I know, yeah, I know. I don't know that. I don't know if I go that strong. Hey, I get a cup from Atlanta, you know. And when I ran Atlanta Knights, it was Tampa Bay's farm team when Phil was running
right,
Tampa
the
Bay.
IHL.
Yeah, the IHL and the Knights. We got a cup. I have a cup here, but the my kid dropped it as a dent. I like to punch him. But the thing is that it was funny. We were in Atlanta, and then we got booted when Atlanta came in the NHL. We ended up going to Quebec. Remember
right.
that?
Yeah,
yeah
absolutely.
So,
How did Chris DePalma was your tough guy down there?
Who was
that again?
Chris DePalma was your tough guy down there.
Yeah, well, he came in. He needed a place to play, but he was a guy that had a lot of experience, and we needed that toughness. He came. We signed him as a free agent, I believe, De Palma.
Right.
Because remember, he was in Minnesota for a while, wasn't
he? He played for the North Stars.
Yeah,
no,
the
that
North
was Larry
Stars,
De Palma.
Right.
That was Larry De Palma.
Oh, you're talking about Chris LaPuma.
LaPuma, I'm sorry, LaPuma, right, not LaPuma, LaPuma.
Yeah, he was a draft pick of Tampa Bay. He was a second rounder. And he came in, and you want to talk about a character. He was unbelievable. He used to, one time, he drove his motorcycle right in the locker room with his helmet on and got off it like nothing happened and went on his stall, changed, and went on the ice. We didn't know what to say. But, yeah, he was a tough kid. He was a defenseman. And he had a few games up in the NHL.
Yeah.
Jerry, last quick thing so I can let the guys go on. Do you have any funny father hospital stories? Eddie's brother, the priest?
Hey, that's my ticket to heaven. I can't talk like that. Come
on. Well, I don't know if you missed it, Ricky. Joe talked about hospital, nailing Gillies so bad that the bridge of his teeth went up. What happened exactly on that? And was that before Gillies got him back and broke his jaw or after?
Oh, no, that was before. Gillies was a payback.
Ah.
Yeah, that's what happened. What happened was at the bench, the door opened. See, him and Eddie were going at it. The door opened at the bench. Then what's his name? What the hell's his name? Who were we just talking about?
Gillies.
Eddie and Clark Gillies. Gillies lost his balance a little, and as he lost, Eddie came in with a punch, hit him right in the mouth. I helped. You know, I was at the door. Blood's coming all over the joint. We bring the guy in the locker room, and I see the dentist saying to him, "You got a pair of pliers." I said, "What do you want pliers for?" He was pulling he got a little lighter, cleaned it, pulled the teeth out of it, was pulling them down.
Wow.
Then all of a sudden they get in it again. I don't know if it was that the next game, whatever. Then they went at him, he broke his jaw. He gave him a punch. I mean, Clark Gillies was a tough man. He was a tough guy. He's a great guy. I think he's around the New York area.
Yeah, he is. He would just raise an eyebrow, and people would be scared crapless.
Yeah, I know, but he was the nicest guy. He was a good man. He was a good man.
Well, Joe, we've come to the end of our time. I got to say, I'd love to have you on again. I mean, I could talk about the old days to the cows.
Oh, man, I'd love to be on. You give me a call anytime. I'd love to be on. I really appreciate it.
All right, Joe. You take care of yourself. The great Joe Patino, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much. And don't forget to watch American Idol.
What, are you going to be a judge? You're plugging the show.
Yeah. All right, stay in touch. Thank you very much for having me, everyone.
All right, take care, Joe.
Okay,
thanks,
bye-bye.
Joe. Bye.
Okay. Joe Patino, what a great guy. I got to tell you. I mean, Jim, was he great or what? As advertised?
Oh, yeah. As advertised, definitely. You had spoken to him a couple of times before the show, and you said that he was going to be a live wire, and he definitely was.
Oh, yeah, he was fantastic. Now, all everybody wants to talk about the Olympics. What are we going to say about the Olympics? There's only three letters that we can say for the most part, and that's you. I love it. I am so excited. I am so revved up. I can't wait. And now it looks like Canada's spanking Germany over here. You know, you never trust the Germans. That's what I always say. I couldn't depend on them. And I tell you, you know, I was thinking about this, and I said this at the beginning of the program about USA. I just feel like they're playing with a lot of heart, and it's more of a unit. The Canadians, I question the defensemen. They've got a lot of offensive defensemen. They got the Dan Boyles, the Shea Webbers. Scott Niedermayer is a fossil. What is he even doing on the team as far as I'm concerned? And Pronger, you know, okay. But I look at that young defenseman. God, I wish they were in Ranger uniforms. Bruce Orpik was almost in a Ranger uniform. I mean, I see that guy hitting, taking the body. The Eric Johnson. I like the makeup of their team, Jim. I think they've got a balanced team. What I do think, the only criticism I would give, and before I let you speak, for I feel like this is my own show. I haven't really let you speak. I feel like a little bit of a hog, but it is my birthday, so I can do anything I want.
That's right.
I think the only criticism on USA I would give, they got to get more offense out of Paul Stastny. I mean, the guy is here for, you know, basically one thing, and that's to put the biscuit in the basket, as they say. And I thought Patrick Kane, as dominating as he seemed, I think he needs to step it up a little offensively. But I think they're more cohesive as a team, where I find the Canadian team is like a bunch of, for lack of a better word, like a bunch of all-stars that are just thrown out there. How do you feel about it?
Well, I think the USA kind of played it, you know, having only been together for a few days, I think they played it kind of close to the vest. And now that they've had a couple of days off, I think you'll probably see a little more offense out of them when they play Switzerland tomorrow. And I know we don't want to get into a big conversation about it because, you know, but let's not forget that the women's team is playing for the gold medal. Thursday against Canada. So, you know, things are good for USA hockey right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had the under-18 team won, the juniors won, the Olympic men's is making noise, the women are playing for the gold. This could be a turning point. We can shove up those arrogant Canadians' proverbial butts. I'm sick of it. Stop being arrogant about your hockey. You don't own the sport. You made it popular and it's your national sport. But USA is coming. We're coming young. We got rid of all those old fossils. We're coming young, and I'm excited. And I got a little bit of. First of all, can I rant? Can I just semi rant maybe?
Go ahead. It's your birthday.
Okay, it's my birthday, so I'm gonna rant.
You can do whatever the hell you want. It's your birthday. Happy birthday! Thank you, Frosty.
Right. I am sick of Mike Milbury. He is... I almost thought about going to GoDaddy.com and registering a domain name called MikeMilburyIsADildo.com. I am sick of this guy. He is a failure. As a coach, a GM, and as a player, he sucked. He was terrible. I don't want to hear his opinion on anything, okay? Number two, Eddie Olczyk. Horrible, horrible, horrible announcer. Tremendously tremendous. Did he actually order those words in that game?
Tremendously
tremendous. You are a buffoon, Eddie Olczyk. And it's not because when I met you with the Coliseum, I said, thanks for 1994, and you were like, oh, it's a Ranger fan. Don't say it too loud here at the Coliseum. It's not because of that. And I know because we're just two Schmendricks, or I'm a Schmendrick on internet radio, and I don't know anything. I can't criticize announcers. I know good announcing. I mean, I know Mandar doesn't like Doc Emrick, but I think Doc Emrick can call a game, and he can see the ice well, and he calls things that may happen or may not happen. The guy knows his puck. And my other beef with this ridiculous announcing of Eddie Olczyk and that Pierre Maguire, why he's wearing that ridiculous, what did they call that, vest he's wearing? Is it cold in the arena? Why does he got to wear that thing? And the thing is, this is Olympic hockey. And, you know, listen, it was on CNBC. I don't care. At least it was televised. You can find it. Come on. What is everybody, doesn't want to find a cable channel? See, everybody going crazy. I couldn't find it. Huh? That's an unknown thing. They had ice dancing on NBC. It's ratings. That's what it is. So they put this game on CNBC. Anybody knows hockey found it. Maybe the regular people couldn't find it. That's true. They have a point there. But it's the Olympics. It's supposed to be the showcase for the National Hockey League. And I got to listen to Tremendously Tremendous talking to, yes, everybody in this chat room, everybody listening to this broadcast knows hockey. So when they make terms, when they bring up terms like support and pinching and all these things, we know what they're talking about. But if they want to appeal to the layman out there that's watching, they failed. Because I felt like I was watching a coaching session with the play-by-play with Olchek. He shouldn't have done that. He should have done that. He really shouldn't have headed to the net. This and that and all this. They're talking, and I'm thinking about, who are we listening to here? Ed Olchek is going to talk about coaching? He was a disaster at Pittsburgh. He stunk. He was horrible. I don't want to hear him talk about his coaching views and what he thinks players should be doing. You suck. Then, in one of his analysis, he goes, you know what? You know, Mike Milbury will back me up on that. Mike Milbury, the dildo? That's like going, that's like, forget about it. That's like going to, I'm trying to make a comparison here. That's like going to, Joseph Mengele for a second opinion. I mean, seriously. Mike Milbury's a dildo. Can't stand the guy. He's arrogant. Eddie O, tremendously tremendous, is a moron. And then they got that Pierre Maguire or whatever his name. Didn't he fail as a GM too? It's a bunch of failures. Telling us what players should be doing, what they should be trying to explain the game of hockey for the people who are seeing it for the first time. Then they show that fatso, and yeah, it's my birthday, I can call somebody else fat. That fat Dracula Gary Bettman in that red suit, what was he, the red, what was that thing he was wearing? He looked awful. Fat people shouldn't wear spandex or whatever that stretchy material he was wearing. He's awful. Awful, awful, awful broadcast. And the game still was great. So that's it. I'm out of breath.
All right, can I? I'll run down your rants and just comment on parts of it, and then we'll take some phone calls. And we got about a half hour to go. Really quick, Emmerich, you're right about the way he calls the game. He sees the whole game. He knows everything that's going on. But it's just tough for me to listen to him. I mean, I thought he was going to have a stroke the other night because the voice, he gets so high and he's yelling at him and he shows that he's conscious. It's the same. And it's, oh, my God. You got to check his blood pressure sometimes. He sounds like he's going to stroke out. As far as Milbury goes, he's terrible. He's a complete – you're right. He's a complete abomination. You can actually feel the hatred that oozing off of Jeremy Roenick sitting next to him, I absolutely love it. The disdain on his face when Milbury's talking, I love it. I absolutely love it. And I just wish Mike Milbury was still the GM in Hempstead.
Oh, God. I got to take my medication. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, I know we can criticize the announcers, and, you know, I should be glad. I mean, I'm not listening to Sam and Joe. And then him, Micheletti in street clothes. He looks weird when he does those interviews.
He's got a long neck.
Yeah, he looks weird. Weird. That's my rant about that. But go USA and... Let's take some phone calls. I need a rest here. Holy cow. I'm out of shape with my rant.
All right. Let's take, I don't know who this is. 917 area code. You're on Blue Shirt Panda Radio. Who's this?
Hey, guys. What's up?
Hey, Zach.
What's up?
How are you?
Zach, hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How about you guys?
Good.
Fantastic.
First off, Ed, happy birthday.
Thank you so much, my friend.
Secondly, I love your rant a ton. I'm still laughing. I mean, did they, like, piss you off or something?
No, it just, you know, when you're watching a hockey game and you take so much pride in your country and, you know, they should have just let Al Michaels do it again or I don't know. I just can't stand Eddie Olczyk. It reminds me of Versus and Mike Milbury I just hate. I don't know what it is. He's just a douche. He's just not a nice guy.
I agree with you on that. The thing is, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just got to say this real quick before I forget. The thing about Eddie Olczyk, I understand why you don't like him. There are sometimes I do like his analysis, like watching the Olympics right now. His analysis is very good. Believe it or not, I'm actually learning something, and that's hard for me to say. But watching him on Versus and the other regular NHL games, yeah, I don't like it. It's just regular textbook, not-so-fun stuff. But he's doing all right for the Olympics. Doc, yes, his screeching voice, you know, crying for Crosby all the time. Oh, Crosby's on the bench. He's doing great on the bench. Yeah, I can't stand it either.
All right. Jim?
Like you said, you brought up a good point with Al Michaels. What are they doing with Al Michaels? I mean, here's a guy that has called every sport. I mean, he's called them all. Hockey, he's done baseball, he's done football. He's got one of the most famous calls in sports history, if not maybe the most famous. I mean, he knows the sports. They're going to sit in front of a fireplace all the time. Like he's having, like he's FDR having a fireside chat. And there's a little Odd Couple reference for Mandar. What are we going to have, a fireside chat? I mean, it's just, he's like, I'm not happy with the NBC coverage, and that's another story. Every time I turn it on, it's curling. And I'm sorry, I know it's the national, I know they love that game in Canada, but, you know, it's 27 hours of Canada. Give me the bobsled. Give me the luge. I watched this thing over the weekend, the ski cross. That was fun. That was exciting. But every time I turn it on, it's curling. Nothing but curling. Somebody in the chat room called it shuffleboard on ice, and that's exactly what it is. Exactly what it is. It's shuffleboard on ice. It's not exciting. I mean, you're watching a disc go 50 feet and a bunch of people with brooms. My mother swept up shit on the kitchen floor for 30 years. It wasn't an Olympic sport.
It's amazing how much they scream in that.
I mean, give me the joke.
You
know, like
there, brother. It ain't your birthday.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to step on the rants, but you know, the luge, the speed skating, they got so many great events in the Winter Olympics, and it's curling all day. Oh my God, it's just ponderous, as Casey Kasem would say.
Ponderous,
man. Oh.
Well, let me ask both. I got Zach and I got you here, so I'm going to ask you something. We have you, who has a severe disdain for Chris Drury, and we have Zach, who liked Chris Drury when he came to the Rangers and kind of soured on him a little. I guess I'll go with you, Jim, first. You got to get the guy his props. He's surely killed the penalties. He's been captain clutch. He got that big goal. You going to give him credit?
Chris Drury has done a fantastic job in the Olympics of showcasing himself to the rest of the NHL, the KHL, the Korean League, and whoever else you want to know. He is available. Look at him. He is a big-time player. I want to hear that phone start ringing off the hook. Chris Drury is a man you want on your team. I just don't want him on mine.
Zach?
The Korean League? Does that even exist?
Esa Tikkanen played in the Korean League, my friend.
Oh, he did?
Yes, sir. Right. It's good enough for Esa Tikkanen, and it's good enough for Chris Drury.
I'll take your word for it. Yeah, Chris Drury is – oh, Canada just scored at date one now. But, yeah, Chris Drury is doing an outstanding job on the penalty kill. When I first saw that he was the 13th forward on the team, I'm thinking to myself, what's going on there? Should I applaud that or be offended by that? But I knew they would put him out on the ice for the penalty killing. He's paired up with Callahan, as always, and they're doing a phenomenal job. Those couple of goals for Drury is outstanding. It's definitely helping USA out. But those are only just regular games. Now we got the do-or-die games, first off against Swiss. Let's see how he does. the next game either against the Czech Republic or Finland. Let's see if he can keep up his composure on towards the gold if we make it that far. So Drury's doing a great job. Hopefully he can continue that momentum when he rejoins the Rangers. I know you still got your eye on him, Jim.
Showcasing himself, my friend. He is showcasing himself.
Well, they're not getting rid of him this year.
He's not going to be traded. He's not going to be traded at the trading
next
deadline.
Year, though, I think.
I'm trying to be funny. I said he's playing. He's playing a terrific tournament. Fantastic. I love it. Hey, he's doing all right for our country. He's doing better than he's doing for our team. That's all right. Chris Drury, I love you.
He's worth every penny.
He's worth every penny. I smell a contract extension, my friends. I smell a contract extension. Renegotiate now. All right. I want to get some other calls on the line. We got a full switchboard with only about 20 minutes to go. So.
All right, Zach. Take care, my friend.
I'll call next week. I'm going to join the show late because I got class.
Well, tomorrow
right, Zach,
we'll be on, too, as well.
Oh, yeah,
all
tomorrow
right.
night, too.
All right, I'll talk
all right,
to you guys later. All right.
Take care,
all right,
bro.
Take care.
All right, I'm going to bring in Mandar and James in a second. I just want to see who this is calling in on Skype because these are always interesting. Unknown caller, you're on Blue Shirt Banner Radio. Who is this?
Hey, guys, how are you? It's me. It's Paul. How are you?
Paul, how
right,
are
Paul.
You?
Eddie,
how you
happy
doing, buddy?
Birthday. That's the main reason I'm calling. I wish you a happy day.
What?
Hey,
that's
Eddie, by
nice.
Chance, did you get the I shot you a couple of emails. Did you get them?
Which did you send them to?
I sent them to your email.
Eddie at Ranger Crisis? Or?
No, the other email.
Oh, I haven't checked my email.
I sent you a couple jokes that I think you'd like. So when you see them and open them, I think you're going to get a big kick out of them. So
okay,
especially the one. So that's
if
it.
I didn't get them, I'll send you a message on Facebook that I didn't get them. And
okay, sounds good. And
did you hear
I'm sorry, Eddie. Go ahead.
I was saying, did you hear anything of the Joe Bucchino?
It was great.
Man, all those stories
were
great.
It absolutely was great, and especially that I heard my boy's name mentioned, Eddie Johnstone, that they took his hat.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's your guy.
Yes. I got a kick out of that. I got a big kick out of that.
But I
just wanted to say next week the season starts up again.
March 2nd.
Yep, and then next Thursday, Rangers and Penguins at the Garden. Sydney comes in, and I think you're going to have a great time, Eddie, there that night at the game.
What do you mean?
I have an extra ticket, bro.
Oh, yeah! Nice! All right!
So I'll be in touch as the week, you know, as we move into next week, but I have a couple people can't make it I usually go with, so the ticket is for you, my friend. As long as we can make it.
Thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate that.
No problem.
Really,
and when Jim comes in, I'll have Jim as my guest, too. I'm not going to forget you, Jim. So
thanks,
let
Paul.
Me know when
I appreciate
you,
that.
When you come in. But listen, I know, guys, the clock is ticking. Great show, and hopefully I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a good one.
All right. Take care,
Paul.
My friend.
Take care,
thanks,
bye.
Buddy.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was nice.
Now, how's that for a birthday surprise?
Yeah,
ticket right. to the Rangers-Penguins game. And by the way, the Rangers, I got an email from the team today. The Rangers get back to work tomorrow morning. There is a practice scheduled. So we'll be getting back to work. And I'm excited. Let's get some Ranger hockey back. I'm ready. We'll see what the rest of the season brings. All right. Without further ado, hold on. Wait a minute. We're going to bring Mandar in, but he made a demand that he wants a theme song. So we'll give him his theme song. All right, that's enough for that because 90% of the 12 people listening to the show just went, what the hell is that? All right, Mandar, welcome to the program. James, welcome to the program. How are you guys?
Fine. How you doing, guys?
Hey, Zach. What's up, James? What's
Eddie,
up?
Hey, man, I had to call up and say happy birthday to you, brother.
Thank you so much, my friend. James is, I tell you, James is a great guy, and I love him. He's like the brother I never had. Well, I did have a brother.
but the brother you never had, right?
I never had. Well, you know what it is? He me and my brother, you know, I don't want to get into it, but me and my brother are so opposite. He's a quiet guy, and he just, it's never gotten, I love my brother. Let me just leave it at that. So, Mando, how you doing, my friend? You're causing trouble in that chat room, my friend.
Not at all. There's a whole bunch of love in there. I want to do a special shout out to Jen, trying to keep my voice down per her request.
She said,
yeah, man, though, you're yelling at that coffee guy there. I don't understand.
Oh, no. Just, hey, I actually tried to keep the peace there. I thought he was Redden's dad.
I know. I saw
but
that.
But before we go on, though, I would also like to throw my hat in the ring and wish the big guy there a very, very happy birthday. I've known him for quite a few years. I've known him on quite a few birthdays. I have a feeling this one will be a little bit more quiet than some of the other ones in the past.
Well,
we had Stan Fischler, but what more do you want?
Yeah, they thought you liked him.
Saturday, I might actually be in the city celebrating the birthday, going nutso with the mayor. What's your availability? You going to be in New York, Mando, or what?
Not for another couple of weeks.
No, okay.
We will catch up with the mayor.
Okay, let's talk about... hockey, what's your take on the Olympics, James? Were you into it as much as you thought you would be, more or less?
You know, I didn't see the first two games. I was busy working and stuff and, you know, didn't even know what the hell times they were on. And, of course, the Canada game, you know, they promoted that one. And, you know, great game. I mean, Miller looked spectacular. I mean, the guy was awesome. And Canada threw everything at them. And, you know, I mean, every time they scored a goal, it came right back, and it was good to see that these guys didn't, you know, crumble under any kind of pressure. They came right back. I mean, they are pros, so, you know, maybe they should be able to do that. So they look good. I mean, you know, at least getting that extra day off and, you know, not having to face Russia right away. So, you know, you never know. I mean, it's not like 1980, not even close. It will never be like that, but... You know, you got to love it. You got to root for your country, and I hope they could at least medal. You know, that would be nice.
James, yeah. the hockey games are easy to find. They're on CNBC right after curling.
That's it. You got to find the curling first and wait around for like 5 hours, and you will see hockey.
Right.
And I didn't even know what that stuff was called, man. It looked like a big round hairdryer. Not a hairdryer, oh, an iron or something, you know. And I see them flinging it down, you know. And I remembered a few years back they had that, the guys sweeping. I thought they were going to get Drury for that job, sweeping the ice particles away, you know.
That is the second most popular sport in Canada behind hockey.
Why?
Yeah.
I mean, wait. Can't you tell by the riveting play on the ice there?
Oh, man, I don't know, but I love the Oscar odd couple thing, man. I'll listen to that than watch curling. I'll listen to that all damn day than watch curling.
You know, I hate to talk about curling because this show is going to really go down the toilet. But isn't there some kind of controversy that the fans are cheering and, you know, like some other teams are very upset because of this, because in their country only like 10 people go to the curling matches and it's disrupting their play.
Yes.
So they've asked the Canadian audiences to be quiet.
Right, because when the skip throws the rock down the ice for the sweepers, they need to have their total concentration. It's like yelling at a golfer when he puts the ball.
But
doesn't everybody know this?
Since when does a rock have a handle? I don't know. And it's flat on the bottom, right? I mean, I don't know.
Tomorrow night,
it's like Italian in my family.
Day.
They play bocce. It's the same thing. Bocce, go to in Brooklyn there, go to the bocce courts, you'll see a whole bunch of old Italian guys throwing the little silver ball, and there's the red balls and the green, and they do the same thing. It's been going on since I was a little kid.
Yeah, you'd watch that, though.
Yeah, Grandpa used to take me there, man.
I don't know, I remember bocce.
A lot of money, you know, them quarters changing hands, you know.
I remember my first beer at my first curling match. It was so much fun.
Jim, you want to eat your jet?
I just want to say tomorrow night on Blue Shirt Banner Radio, the coach and captain of the U.S. curling team.
Manda.
Right.
Yes, the curling minute with Mandar.
Yeah.
The curling critic.
No, he said the curling minute.
Yeah, the curling minute.
Oh, all right, fine. Then Ben has to be my sidekick because she just loves hearing my voice.
Well, it's because it's so soft.
Yes. You're very soft-spoken.
Very soft-spoken. So, I don't know. I mean, where are we going to go with this? I mean, you got the Olympics. I went with James's opinion. I mean, what do you think's ahead of Mandar? I mean, you're an astute gentleman. You're a man of hockey. What do you foresee in the future?
Well, you know, I agree with Jim about I've never believed in stopping a season just to promote a game. If you want to, you know what though, if you want to put the NHL out there, do it in the summer. Then move it to the Summer Olympics. You know why? Because they did that with basketball. It doesn't interrupt basketball season. Basketball's supposed to be a sport that's, you know, in the fall and winter time season too. But that notwithstanding, I'll tell you what, the U.S. built the team the right way. They didn't go with necessarily the best U.S. players, although they all seem to be playing well, but they fit. And they have a lot more continuity, you know, it looked like, than the Canadians. Even though the Canadians really dominated this Germany game, there are a lot of individuals. They don't really – there's no fit there. They just don't look like they have any chemistry.
Let me ask you guys a question. Does the Canadian team – the way it's built, are they a team that would be that look like they're more built for an Olympic size rink? Like if the Olympics were being played somewhere else on the Olympic size rink, you know, guys that are more skaters at a faster game, whereas it looks
what,
like the USA team was built more
no,
to play.
I think the Canadians are actually built for the smaller rink. The US, I think the US has just as much team speed as them. And can you imagine the Russian guys?
Oh, man.
On a bigger sheet of ice, too, and the Swedes and the Finns, I don't think that it really benefits the Canadian team at all. I think that they actually get the benefit of the smaller ice.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, that's exactly right. And, you know, Jim said it right. I mean, this Canadian team, I mean, they are stacked. I mean, they got every line they throw out there is like, forget about it. But, you know, it's again... And I think what's going to play in the USA's favor is playing this team type of concept. You know, they've only played three games together and, you know, not many practices. And I think it should come together a little bit more in the next couple of games. Progress should be made even further as far as everybody knowing their roles. Because let's face it, they're going to be more of a role-playing team than Canada, who is just going to be throwing that relentless – I mean, Rick Nash, I said it early in the chat room, and I maybe I'll get bashed for this. I've said it early in the season, too, and I know Jackie's not going to like this, but I would trade anybody on the Rangers for Rick Nash, anybody, because I just think he's a horse. He's a guy that is succeeding on a team that's been mediocre for years, that just made the playoffs for the first time last year. He's a guy, I swear to God, if he was a woman, I would – well, I'm married, so I can't – but if, I just love the guy. I think he's the guy in a power forward. He just – he's about as close as you're going to get to Cam Neely as maybe Brandon DeBince.
Oh, boy.
All right, sorry, yep. Bully. I don't want to talk this. But really,
oh,
I
boy.
Really like –
The lights just went on in Tampa.
What? City Hockey Fever just made a point about over Gabrick. What are the ages between Gabrick? Is Gabrick a little bit older than Nash?
Yeah.
I thought it was Nash.
Can't be by much. Gabrick's 27,
yeah.
Isn't he?
What is Gabrick, 26, 7, 28?
I think Gabrick's 27, isn't he?
27.
Huh. I don't know. What are you guys thinking about it, Gabrick or Nash?
Nash is 26. Well, he'll be 26. In June.
And Nash is an injury prone like Gabrick. I mean, knock on wood, Marion State's healthy, but still, I gotta go with Rick Nash. I love the physical play. Marion's great, but I just like the fact that, and even Gabrick, if you think about it, on teams that really weren't known for goal scoring and didn't have a lot of guys around them, they've done pretty well. But I just love the physical. When he decides to go for the net, he makes the other guys look like little kids out there.
I mean, I'm with you, Eddie. I like that big, that hulking, you know, forward that's gonna go in there like a Cam Neely type, just a power forward and someone who's going to, you know, rattle the boards and, you know, just stand in front of the net or, you know, do whatever. Where, you know, Gabrick's more of, you know, skating and, you know, I mean, he's a pretty decent-sized guy, Gabrick. I think he's like 6'1", something like that. I mean, but he doesn't really get into the physicalities of it. Like, you know, Rick Nash, like you said,
Dan Costillo is punching him senseless like
Dan Girard. Exactly. That's why Rick Nash is, like you say, he's a monster, man, you know, and I'd love to. Who wouldn't want to have him?
What's the
Eddie,
chat
I'd argue,
say on this? And then I'll go to you guys.
Okay. They're just
Gabrick.
Talking about Gabrick. Gabrick is 2 years older than Nash. They're not really weighing in with an opinion. And
well,
Mary
Lou says F Nash. Yeah, well, you might want to F him after Gabrick is, his groin is hanging off his freaking thigh bone. I mean, seriously, that's another deciding factor is the injury.
The doctor has spoken.
So what do you guys think?
Well, I trade anybody except Gabber because I just think it'd be nice to see them play together.
Okay. James, what do you think?
If I had a chance to get Nash, I'm trying to think of our roster. I think the first guy to get rid of is Redden, right? you know, every team wants Redden. He's the great first passer out of the zone. So you know, I'd offer all that. No, but Rick Nash. I mean, I would pretty much trade anybody. I mean. The guy's what he is, and, you know, I like that power forward, and we don't really have that, and I love that.
Mando!
I trade Redden for Kevin Nash. I just wish Ricky was here to hear me make a wrestling reference.
Graham Nash!
Mando, I know you, since Stevie Maven is not chiming in the voice of reason, you're about as close as we get as to the voice of reason in this discussion, which is saying a lot.
I think Stevie Davis on hold.
Oh, he's on hold? Uh-oh,
I think he just popped up.
Well, let's
DB, is that you?
Yes, sir.
I could tell by you have a hum when you call. There's kind of like a certain
oh,
noise that I can tell that it's you. But anyway, all right, go ahead, Mandar.
Mandar, we're trouble, man.
I'm still going with you build your team from the goaltender out. Would I trade Hank for Nash straight up? I wouldn't do that. I still wouldn't do that. Now, Ricky probably, his head just exploded, I know that. But would I trade anybody else on this team? Yes. Anybody else on this team, up to and including Gabrick, I would trade to get Nash, because I think Nash has a dominant streak in him more than anybody else. You know, Gabrick, while he's great, he always finds the seam. He's a great two-way player. He finds the open spaces, but Nash creates those. As opposed to Gabrick finds them, Nash actually creates those spaces. He gets a lot of room on the ice and a lot of respect, but I still wouldn't do it for Hank, but I would do it for anybody else they have.
You see what I said last week, guys? He comes up with these things nobody else thinks of. I'm thinking of a whole range of team, and for some reason I didn't think of Hank at all. I'd have to agree with him there. He's the one guy I wouldn't trade anybody else, yeah.
Okay. DB Maidley.
I would probably go with anybody except Hank and Gabby.
So you take, if you had an even switch right now, you're taking Gabrick over Nash.
They're tough to compare. I still think you need both types of players on your team. I wouldn't want to get rid of Gabrick.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I guess you're you're praying. I don't want to say that.
I wouldn't either. But it's harder to get a Rick Nash. I mean, than getting more of a European forward who can maybe put the puck in it. It's hard to get them big forwards and stuff, you know. That's why, you know, Nash would do it for me.
Okay.
All right, let me jump in here real quick because we got under a minute to go. Just to remind everybody, tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, right here, same bat time, same bat channel, Blue Shirt Banner Radio. Tomorrow night, You guys, Paul, we're going to talk a little bit more about the trade deadline. You guys have some trade ideas, some proposals you want to throw out. Give us a call tomorrow night. We'll talk about them. And then next week we'll be on Wednesday night, which is trade deadline day. We'll be on 8 to 10. And then next Sunday for the Fire Seder Rally, you can hear the whole thing right here. Eddie will be live on the scene, and I will be here in the studio. So we'll catch you guys tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Eddie, again, happy birthday.
Thank you. I have big announcements for tomorrow. Big announcements.
Okay. All right, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Take care, everybody.
All right. We are off the air. Okay, I apologize. You have big announcements for tomorrow night?
Yeah, just some card shows I'm doing. Appearances.
Oh, okay. Okay. Appearances.
You can't do those after March 1st, right?
Why? The deadline? Well, that's right now, I guess. Oh, man. I got to tell you, Joey Pacino was fucking funny, man. Some of that stuff that he was coming out with.
Yeah, he was good.
I think
it sounded like he was just getting warmed up, too.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Cotsy with the hole in the shorts. His underwear. I can't wait to get him with that one. Because Kotze can't take a joke. Oh, he's old. And that's what Nick Fetillo said. We never messed with Kotze. He couldn't take it.
he's one of them angry Greeks, huh?
No, he's like, you know, some guys you know that just can't take it, but they can give it.
See, my wife is full Greek. She's sitting right next to me, and she's laughing at me.
As long as she's laughing, that's a good
thing. She's laughing. She's like, So I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's like, you're going to get it. Or, you know.
Yeah. She might go, what's that lady's name on?
She might get the dishes and start throwing them at me.
She might go, what was that guy who got his penis cut off?
Bobbitt, John Wayne Bobbitt.
There you go.
John Wayne Bobbitt on you. But Lorena guys,
Bobbitt.
A lot of, that's right, Lorena Bobbitt. Wow.
Lorena Bobbitt.
Well, guys, fantastic show. Thanks for all the birthday wishes. It meant a lot to me. It really did.
Oh, you're welcome, man. I couldn't let that go by at all, man.
Yeah. So we'll talk to you tomorrow night. USA! USA!
That's it. All right, guys. You have a good night.
Take care.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Who else would it be?
Me.
You?
Yeah. I'm sick of a Kit Kat, but Mommy get me so out of her foot.
Are you not behaving?
Yes, I am.
I thought I heard you getting yelled at once or twice. Hi, Mommy. What's the matter?
I can't take it.
What's wrong?
It's horrible. I'm not listening. All day long.
All right. I'm all done, honey. No, I'm all done. I'm done. Thank you. I'm done. You're saying I'm all done.
What? No, my dad ain't gonna watch Lost in a minute. Did it just come on?
Rethinking what pain reliever you're taking? For over 25 years, in test after test, Advair has been shown to be safe and effective when taken as directed. So relief you can trust. Reach for Advair.
Thank you.
Joseph Ramp in the yellow bin.
Yeah.
And the 300 multi-display system.